the King, the King of Kings. On your knees, dog. All hail.
All right, Inhumans 1998, starting right now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Source Material. We are here recording early if you're joining us on YouTube, but if not, this will be hitting your ears Monday, September 4th. Is that Labor Day?
Yep.
That's Labor Day. D-zang. So we're,
why would you
we're pitching
that?
In. D-Zang? I say it all the time, Ronnie Adams. Don't you? You never hear me. I say it under my breath.
No.
At least people, 20 times a podcast.
All right.
So we're tossing in our hat here and going and synergizing as, is it the Inhumans movie?
What it is it's the first two episodes, I believe, of the Inhumans ABC television show that'll be on later in the month of September.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're releasing the IMAX.
Yeah, they're releasing in IMAX.
They're releasing the television shows in IMAX.
Just the first two episodes.
Interesting. All right,
I think they've done something like this before, where like there was a certain television show that had special meaning, and they released it in IMAX. Certainly, they've done Phantom Events for direct-to-video releases for a couple of, like, the DC animated films, like the most recent Batman and Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Phantom Event. The Killing Joke was a Phantom Event.
Yep.
The Return of the Caped Crusader was a Phantom Event. So, I mean, it's not abnormal to do, like, you know, to put things that are direct-to-TV, direct-to-video events in either IMAX or in just in the theater.
Okay.
I think because they shot some of the Inhuman stuff in IMAX, that's how they wanted to debut it. This is big time for Marvel. They still don't know if they're going to do an Inhumans movie, but they had scrapped the planned Inhumans movie and decided to adapt it for television, which I can kind of see why they did that, and it makes sense.
Can I want to ask a real quick question. Both of you chime in here. I don't watch much TV anymore.
I'm not saying another word till I'm properly introduced.
That's Crashy Mark Radulich.
My lord.
Crashy Mark Radulich is on the horn with us here.
Mark Radulich.
And then we got Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy podcast. He
introduced me properly, Jesse.
Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. He did not do the chips, just to let everybody know.
That's more like it.
He's Ronnie Adams. All right, now let me ask a question. Have they been marketing? Have you guys seen any marketing for this television show or this release at all?
Yeah.
No.
Some Facebook stuff.
Facebook stuff?
I haven't seen much of anything. I knew about it just because I keep up on the movie releases. But if I didn't keep up on movie releases, I would have had no idea this was coming out.
They've crapped upon this already, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's not getting good reviews now.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll leave the television show review because you guys are doing a review on that, right?
Yes, I actually have tickets to go see the IMAX, the first two episodes in IMAX this Friday. The day after this airs on the network, we will be doing a Damn You Hollywood for Inhumans.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, so our contribution here on Source Material is to discuss a 1998 release, which I think was Marvel Knights. Yeah, it was a Marvel Knights release. This is second contribution in a month for Marvel Knights to Source Material.
Is but Marvel Knights code for Marvel Ultra Wordy?
Almost. This is not Kevin Smith, and I think we can be thankful for that. This is Paul Jenkins. Now, Paul Jenkins, straight from the wiki here, British comic book writer, screenwriter, novelist, and narrative director. And he pin the tale that we're going to be discussing this evening, which is Inhumans. No real subtitle underneath that. It's just Inhumans. It's a 12-issue story arc. Came out in 1998. On the art is a very prominent name that if you are a fan of 90s comic books, you'll recognize this artist's names, and that is Jay Lee. He was brought on to the Image scene and did a few Image books. That's where I remember first seeing his art style. He had this kind of like bleeding art style. That's the only way I could describe it, really. When I looked at this, I kind of expected the same thing, and I got far from it. He is well polished here in 98. What I would remember him from is the early 90s, 92, 93. And I'm not saying his art was bad back then. It was just a different style. Very recognizable. Very recognizable. So, okay, so that's Jay Lee. All right. This apparently, which by the way, I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but right there on the wiki, big bold letters, in 1998, Lee and writer Paul Jenkins crafted an Inhumans Limited series that we're going to discuss tonight, for which they won the 1999 Eisner Award for Best New Series. This is highly lauded amongst those stories that came out in the late 90s. Let's go ahead and, I guess, Mark, do you have any did you have any preconceived notions, or did you have any idea who the Inhumans were going into this?
Well, I knew who the Inhumans were because I used to read Fantastic Four. Medusa actually was in the Fantastic Four there for a little bit. I also was familiar with Black Bolt because the Incredible Hulk beat the fuck out of him. or at least we thought it was him. It was actually a Skrull, if I remember correctly, at the beginning of World War Hulk. So, I mean, I knew who Black Bolt was. I was familiar with Lockjaw. Actually, earlier in the year, I read the first couple of issues that were in a trade paperback collection when the Thing had his own comic book. And
oh yeah,
there was a period of time where the Thing went to the moon to deal with the Inhumans, and he was doing the Crystal and the baby Quicksilver. Yeah, I was moderately familiar with the Inhumans, and as I knew them, like I said, they lived on the moon, and Black Bolt and Medusa were the king and queen of the royal family, and I really didn't know much beyond that.
Okay. Yeah, these guys are a weak point when it comes to me and my Marvel knowledge. I didn't know a whole lot about the Inhumans other than, yeah, I could tell you who the characters were, but when it came to like the power set of each one, I had no idea. Not only that, but the Inhumans are not just this. You know, I thought that it was just these five or six people of the royal family. No, that's the whole, like, that's the name of their whole race.
The other way that I knew them was as part of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I didn't know if you watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or not, but they are a huge part of, like, season two and beyond, where basically because they don't have mutants in this world, the Inhumans have become the mutants of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the sense that once they were discovered... One of the season finales, I don't remember if it was two or three, the Terrigen Mist is tossed into the ocean, and it basically gets into, like, it gets caught with a bunch of tuna, and it gets into, like, a supplement, and basically people are being exposed to Terrigen Mist unknowingly across the world.
Oh,
and
wow.
S.H.I.E.L.D. is having to, like, basically go out there and find people who are suddenly being changed by the Terrigen Mist.
Okay.
Because it unlocks some sort of inhuman genetic...
Yeah, some kind of, like, code. Yeah. That's what I got from
If it doesn't kill you or turn you into an alpha primitive.
Okay.
Ever since season two, basically, and I've watched the last two seasons out of the four of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season two, I only watched like part of, the part that lined up with the Avengers Age of Ultron. So long story short, that's the other way that I know the Inhumans, but that never dealt with the royal family. None of what's happened in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has dealt with Black Bolt or Medusa or the moon or anything else like that. It's all been humans accidentally exposed to Terrigen Mist.
Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting plot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in my opinion. But it's funny that you say it was season two. I stopped, I think, before... I may have got to the end of season one, but I've stopped watching at that point.
Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., finally found its groove, but it took some time getting there. And those first couple of episodes of season one are fucking unwatchable.
It's rough. It's rough. Well, Ronnie, how about you, man? What's your history?
It was limited. I knew who the Inhumans were, that they lived on the moon and they were some sort of royal family of the moon. Of the moon.
We've landed on the moon.
But moon people.
They're moon people. But I didn't, you know, the Terrigen Mist and stuff like that came later. I wasn't real super familiar with that. I always liked Black Bolt. I mean, to a point, you know, his power was incredible. One of the ones that comic books that I remember reading about him in was a What If. What if the symbiote had killed Peter Parker? It got a hold of Thor, or either Thor or the Hulk. It did get a hold of him in the story, both of them. Mm-hmm. So it was hole up in a cave in monument. With all the presidents. What am I? Oh my God.
Mount Rushmore.
They said Black Bolt did something that he never has done before, or something like that. He screamed and destroyed all of Mount Rushmore just to kill the symbiote.
The symbiote? No kidding. Yeah. So let's introduce our characters here, because we've already talked a little bit about them. Our listeners may not know who the Inhumans are, and I want to do my best to maybe go through.
Crystal, who was one of the Inhumans, was a part of the Avengers for a while. And wasn't she married to Quicksilver?
Yes. And they had a baby, and then there was an argument over whether or not the baby should be exposed to Terrigen Mist.
Yeah, and that's how I was familiar with them as well. Mostly just Crystal in that earlier Avengers, you know, 90s Avengers kind of deal.
Was Johnny Storm seeing one of them? I'm going to say he was seeing Crystal too.
But he was seeing Crystal, and I think he had a thing going on with Medusa here recently.
Okay, all right. Well, yeah, we'll go ahead. We'll get into our...
Johnny Storm's a man whore.
Good old flame on, bro. Let's talk about the characters here real quick of the royal family and those around it. First off, I want to talk about the setting, where the kingdom of the Inhumans are at. And I'm going to pronounce this as Adalan. I don't know if you guys are going.
No, it's Attilan.
Now. All right. Attilan. Mark.
That's what it sounds like you're going to say. Now Mark.
Now
right.
Mark.
That's how I've always heard it pronounced.
Attilan. All right. So we go with Attilan, the mystical city that was at one point. I call it a mystical city. It's just a kingdom, but there's some strange properties to this place. Very advanced technology. I think we mentioned already that they were on the moon at one point, which I think Attilan was part of the moon. And then it's, for the purposes of this story, it's been transported in, it's on Earth. And I think on an island that Namor, the Submariner, believes is Atlantis. Okay, that's important because that plays a part in this story. But that's where all of our Inhumans and the royal family are located at, okay? We have Black Bolt, the leader, the king, if you will, of the Inhumans, cannot speak without leveling things.
Killing everyone.
Yeah, the sound of his voice, it's just unreal. It levels cities, mountains, what have you. So he has to take great care. He has a great responsibility to make sure that he doesn't say things. Even in this book, I think at one point, Medusa's talking about how he's meditating to go to bed because, I mean, when he's sleeping, he can't yell and scream like from a nightmare or something like that, or he's going to destroy his people. So he has to make sure that he has this under control. And of course, he has not only that, he has to worry about his kingdom as well. Then we have Maximus, who is he's the brother, right? He's not like the half brother or anything like that.
No, he's
his brother.
He's
right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Maximus is the brother of Black Bolt, who I believe has like psychic powers, and he's crazy, absolute batshit crazy.
Yep.
In fact, Black Bolt and Maximus have come to they've come to loggerheads many times. Maximus currently resides in a prison near the bottom of Attilan. Then we have Medusa, the wife of Black Bolt, who has the long flowing red hair, which is she's able to control and use like tentacles, I guess you would say. Prehensile hair she has. All right. I don't know what other power she has, if she has any, but that's what we have here in this book. That's what we see. Then we have Karnak, which I think is I remember Josh Calandra's talking about reading just the series that came out revolving around Karnak. I think it was called Karnak, who is this. He's like a military genius or a fighting genius. He can find the weak spot in anything. whether it be a plan or whether it be a structure, he knows, or or a person, he knows where that crack is at, how to exploit it, and bring things down if need be, or fortify them if need be. Then we have Gorgon, who is half human, half goat, I think is
yeah
what they were saying. And this is the military leader of the Inhumans, and he's faithful right-hand man to Black Bolt. We also have Triton, who is the creature from the Black Lagoon. Okay, just picture that in your mind. Maybe Abe Sapien from the Hellboy franchise. Mm. Who can go underwater, he can talk underwater. That's kind of like his power set. We have Crystal, who we already talked about. She's the sister of Medusa, I believe. And I don't know if she has any powers. I'm sure she does, but I don't know of them off the top of my head. And I certainly didn't do research. What do you expect me to do here, podcast? So if you guys know, just chime in. But then we have Lockjaw. Lockjaws are he's a good boy. You know, he's our puppy dog. They're the Inhumans' puppy dog here, who has he has the ability to teleport. Okay, if the Inhumans need him to, if they need him to go somewhere, they can somehow tell this dog where they want to go, and boom, he'll take them there. All right,
so Crystal can fly, and she has the ability to manipulate the elements.
Oh, that's right. They do mention that. Mm-hmm. She is okay. All right, cool. All right. Anything I missed there? Anything else you'd like to you guys would like to bring up before we get into the synopsis here?
Lockjaw's awesome.
He's not like your regular sized dog, people. All right. You gotta think about this thing. This thing is like a pug?
Kind of.
Like a pug mixed with like a bulldog, and then he's like 20 stories high. He's huge. He's a big dog. I'm not, when I say 20 stories,
he ain't that big.
He's bigger than a human.
You could ride him into battle.
Yes, you could. You could. So there you go. Mark, you ready, man?
Yep.
All right. Okay. So I'm going to do four issues at a time because we got 12 people, 12 issues of the Inhumans, Marvel Knights. Just like Mark said, it's wordy. It may not be as wordy as Guardian Devil, but it's there. All right. So issue one, an introduction to our heroes, their unwavering loyalty to our king, Black Bolt. Although some question how Black Bolt can remain sane and be king all at the same time while unable to use his voice. Imagine that. You're a king. You have all these subjects, but you cannot express to them, you know, hey, you need to chill out, or hey, you need to do this. Hey, you need to do that. Instead, you know, he has to keep all this pent up inside of him. And a lot of people are worried about him. So we kind of get our introduction to King Black Bolt and the things that he has to deal with. We're shown his brother Maximus, who's in a cell being watched over. But he's upset that with how Attilan has been brought to Earth. For some reason, Maximus has got an issue with that. And throughout the first issue, we just get the whole heavy is the head that wears the crown. But then at the end of the issue, you know, it's played out throughout the whole issue. What would you say if you can't talk to him? But what would you say to your loyal subjects? And Black Bolt, the last pages is Black Bolt sitting back with kind of like a half smile on his face saying, relax. I was like, oh, okay. All right. All right.
Frankie
so Black
says, Frankie says, relax.
Apparently. So does Blackagar Boltagon.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up his name.
So yeah, put that on a shirt. All right, so that's kind of like issue one, our introduction and the worries that our great leader has. Issue two brings us a look at some, I guess we'll call them students. I don't know. I mean, they're young kids that are going through this ritual, this rite. And it focuses on the day before their Terrigenesis, where they are exposed to the Terrigen Mists. We kind of alluded to it earlier. These Terrigen Mists, they unlock genetic codes in a person. To where you become unique, whatever that genetic code is. Like, you know, Ronnie could get exposed to the Terrigen Mist. Me and him, you know, we look the same. We're both white, male, almost 40. But then all of a sudden the Terrigen Mists come around, and then Ronnie starts growing a third leg and and one wing, and then a big long elephant trunk nose. And then me, I might become like a slug or something. It's something in our genetic code.
Why do you gotta make us like the losers?
Well, I'm illustrating the point, how different we would be, even though we look kind of similar now. That genetic code, once it's unlocked, boom, we shine, brother. We shine. But not only that, but
shine.
I would have some kind of, like, I'm a slug, man. I got the stinky film stuff on me. And anyway,
I could fly in circles and spit water at people. And
he's Dumbo. Dumbo the flying elephant, ladies and gentlemen.
Only one wing. I could fly in circles, and that's it.
So there you go. That's kind of what the Terrigen Mists do. Now these kids are, you know, they're on the precipice of going in and getting this done, but there's a fear there, because sometimes it doesn't go so well. Sometimes people die. They may lose their friends, and it's a great allegory for individuality, in my opinion. So this definitely changes them. Not only that, it affects them, you know, their status in the kingdom. As they go in, there is, you know, everybody changes. There's this perceived, one of the kids dies, a guy by the name of Waz, or at least it seems like there was a perceived death in this issue. And all of a sudden, Karnak kind of realizes that there's a flaw in the kingdom. As one of the students by the name of Waz, even though at first I thought he died, it's not the case. He was an inhuman who is now transformed into an alpha primitive. All right, now, anybody, Mark, can you give me an idea, or maybe our listeners an idea, as to what an alpha primitive is?
The society itself is split into, you know, those who have powers due to the Terrigen Mist, and then those who are reduced to sort of animal-like being, that being the alpha primitives. They're like cavemen, basically.
Mm-hmm. And they do all the work, right?
Yes.
Is that what it was? They're like the guys down underneath making all the machines. There's a constant reminder or a constant mention of the machine, making the machine work. So that was kind of that's the end of issue two. Now we get into issue three, where they focus on there's a good bit of the alpha primitives. Waz is brought down there and introduced into them. You know, hey guys, this was an inhuman. Now he's not. Here you go. Make him feel welcome. There's a lot of concern in the kingdom about what does this mean? You know, usually when the Terrigen Mists hit an inhuman, we have this, you know, we have this great transformation. Now the alpha primitives, who kind of are looked at as below the inhumans, at least that's my interpretation, they see an inhuman transform into that. So there's some worry, because this has never happened before. Waz attempts to make himself fit in below the city with all the other primitives, but things are not as they seem, as Waz actually begins to change. And by the end of the book, we find that he can teleport into something called the Antiverse. It's like if he looks into a reflective surface, he can jump into like this different universe and then come out a different reflective surface. So he could travel between these, almost like the Mirror Master, I guess. And his first attempt at doing this, he actually ends up in Maximus's cell, who has actually been expecting him. So that's the end of issue three. Things are getting a little crazy here. And then we hit issue four. We have the world's reaction. Okay. Now remember, Attilan is out there on Earth. It's not like it's being hidden. There's actually there is a force field around Attilan, which blocks, the pollutants in the air, because if an inhuman gets exposed to the regular pollutants that me and you are used to, they can suffer. They could possibly die. So there's this kind of shield out there. But humanity's perception of the inhumans is, well, a lot of people dig them. They think they're pretty cool. And then there's some concern, especially by the governments, as to, you know, what are these guys going to do here? They're a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. And so we get a little bit of that in this issue. Now, Maximus has Waz. Maximus, remember, the crazy brother of Black Bolt, tells Waz and has him go grab this. I think I'm going to call him a Russian general. At least it looks like he's, or a mercenary of some sort. He's some higher up, Stjalnik or something like that. But anyway, he goes and grabs this guy and brings him into Maximus's cell. And Maximus and this general have this past. Maximus says, hey, here you go. I'm going to give you the key to entering and attacking Attilan. Now, this Russian general wants to make a name for himself. So he's absolutely ready to rock and roll. Soon as Maximus gives him this, it's like a little microchip, if I remember correctly. He's like, here, you take this and you can attack this city. But, you know, we'll talk about that later. Now, Lockjaw, remember, our good puppy Lockjaw knows something's going on. He knows there's some kind of crazy stuff going on with Waz. As a matter of fact, it's like he can kind of see him You know, it's not like Lockjaw can speak or anything like that. He can't talk and tell us what's going on, but he knows there's something shady going on with Waz and Maximus. And by the end of issue four, he actually brings one of Waz's students' friends on a trip into the Antiverse. This was Tarja or Tanaja. It's not Tarja, but Tanaja or something like that. Anyway, he brings one of the friends that that Waz used to know into the Antiverse, and they actually they see each other, where she sees someone there. And we, you know, I don't know if she knew it was Waz immediately. I don't think she does. She just knows that somebody's there. And so this girl now knows there's something going on as well. So Lockjaw's done his job. He's alerted. He's a good boy. He let us know something's up. So that's issue four. All right. So there we go. Four issues. Okay. I just kind of want to start out with this. I remember some of my first readings of the whole Inhumans thing. And I remember this whole subclass, Alpha Primitive thing. Okay. And I never really understood, and I couldn't figure out how this was justified. You know, why the Inhumans allowed they kind of look like Neanderthals, you know, to work like slaves underneath the city of Attilan. Has that ever, Mark, I mean, has that ever bothered you how they treated these people? Or was that something that just, you know, that wasn't in the stories that you read?
Well, when they introduced the idea, it didn't bother me. I mean, that's how that society runs. I know in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Alpha Primitives were even worse than the way they're, I mean, they were like mute and they had no face. They were basically like dogs.
Oh, wow.
They were just wild dogs that were set upon whatever victim or target that needed getting. So, no, I wasn't surprised. And I figured eventually the writers will tell us a story with this, you know, this information will be important.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important. And I let the listeners know that, you know, Waz, his transformation into an Alpha Primitive brought those aspects along as well, where, you know, he's just kind of, he speaks in one sentence. You know, he was a smart, intelligent boy. And then all of a sudden now he's just this outcast of society who is, you know, if somebody come up to you and spoke in one sentence, like me want so-and-so or me want that, you're going to think
so happy. God, if most of the people I dealt with just said one sentence to me and that was it, that would be awesome.
Make life so much easier. But that's a telltale sign of intelligence is the vocabulary, and they practically don't have it. And I don't remember if it's talked about. It might be in the introduction in that one book that focused on the Alpha Primitives, how they were just genetically, I think they were just created in a lab. It's not like there's moms and dads in that society. Did you guys get that impression as well? Or
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I mean, it kind of seems like the whole thing runs on a caste system. And if you are not an Inhuman, then basically you're the worker drone.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I was along with Mark. I was just like, oh, well, that's how this
society
flows.
Did you feel sorry for him?
Well, yeah. No. I mean,
Mark's crotchety old Mark has no soul, so that's all right.
Well, no, I mean, I didn't feel sorry for him because, again, they were like just short of being animals.
Okay.
You know, they were, I mean, what'd you want them to do? Run the government? They, you know, they're special needs children.
Okay. All right.
Well,
Ronnie, wait, did you say you did feel sorry for him?
A little bit.
A little bit.
Now, even more so now. No, it's just like I said. It was just how that society worked, and it didn't really. I felt a little sorry for them because, you know, they were created specifically for this task. It seemed like so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just like, I don't know. Kind of felt sorry for them, but not really. In between, I guess. Like, oh, that must suck to be. And then when Waz turned into one, then you're like, oh,
yeah,
oh gosh, yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, and I think it's in these issues where Karnak says, hey, look, you know, this hasn't happened before in the past, but there was a lady who was doing research, and this might happen a couple issues ahead of here. That doesn't matter. But there was a lady that was doing research that said, when this occurs, when teragenesis happens, we transform in advance of something that's about to come. So in other words, our body is transforming into something in order to adapt to the future. So the fact that Waz turned into a Alpha Primitive, they had them all scratching their heads like, okay, what lies ahead for us? So yeah, big question. All right. So let's go ahead. We'll get into 5, 6, 7, and 8 here. I'll do my best to keep it short. Do these 4 issues. All right. So issue 5. Now, remember, we had the general out there who's going to be attacking Attilan, and it begins. There's a very futile attack by the humans led by this General Stalniak. I know I'm messing his name up. I don't care. there's, you know, he's leading the troops in there. It's like this mercenary troop, and they're attacking attacking the city. Remember, it's got this big dome outside. The shells are just exploding on the shield. There's no problem. Okay. The Inhumans are like, what are the hell are these guys doing? But Karnak, again, remember Karnak, the man who can find a flaw in anything. He believes he has found there may be a flaw that they need to worry about. What could this thing be? Now, meanwhile, Black Widow gives at least a lady that looks like Black Widow. I'm going to assume
that's what she's going by.
Yeah, that's what she's going by. So it seems kind of shady to me, but she gives she gives this man a Trojan horse. It's basically Abraham Lincoln on a horse. But he's given to Stalniak, gives Black Widow that device so they can get in there. They put it in this Trojan horse. She says, hey, your job, gives it to like the senator, some high ranking government official. Your job is to get this into Attilan. Then we can bring the shield down. Now, Black Bolt, by the way, while this attack is going on, Black Bolt is doing nothing. And even though he could go out there and level this army, or he could send forces out there that could probably just take care of these guys, liggety split, he does nothing. He instead sends some Inhumans to address the UN. Again, remember, Attilan is, I think, on Atlantis. So politics don't really go so well at the UN for the Inhumans. An American representative shows up and says, hey, yeah, we'd love to help you out, but, you know, we kind of don't want to get involved because so-and-so over here would have a problem with us and they'd have a problem with us. So really, they're just on their own. And the Inhumans figure out the politicking just ain't their thing, and they're not in a very good situation right now. But the American representative, I had told you, gives the Inhumans representative, this little baby-like guy, I don't know, in a bubble, the Trojan horse. Doing my best descriptions here. We also find out that the wall or the shield that protects Attilan may have a weakness, because what we find out is that they charge this shield. The shield is charged like a maximum charge throughout the whole time until a lightning storm comes around. And when that happens, if lightning hits this thing, it's going to cause the shield to possibly have this huge discharge, and they're going to have issues. The shield may overload. So when a lightning storm hits, they turn the shield down. Now, that's important because guess what? The humans are attacking. This mercenary troop is attacking, of course, during a storm. And at the end of issue 5, boom, go the walls of Jericho. The shield comes crashing down as lightning hits it, because what has happened is all these shells were hitting it and actually charging the shield, all sorts of crazy stuff. Long story short, shields down, ladies and gentlemen. Here come the soldiers. Get ready. Now issue 6, the general uses the information that Maximus has given him to begin his attack. We are constantly reminded throughout this issue that of the Inhumans' power and Black Bolt's power. So, and why don't they defend their own place? I mean, these guys, all they're doing is, now that the shield's down, they're just going out there and like possibly raising more like telekinetic shields, trying to protect the city as best as they can. But we're constantly reminded, why aren't they just laying these soldiers out? Now, the human soldiers are banking on Black Bolt's nature and his inclination not to attack, as he could easily kill them, but he's not going to. Black Bolt understands that he can't attack those soldiers without it affecting his kingdom immensely. If he does that, there's going to be repercussions. So what does Black Bolt decide to do? He decides to retreat, bring the soldiers even in further. Go ahead.
One of the things that he's afraid of is that, strangely enough, you don't see a larger connection to the Marvel Universe in this series, but that's exactly what he's afraid of. He's like, if we attack the humans, they're going to retaliate, but they're going to send like the Avengers.
Okay.
And then we're going to have a problem.
Yeah. They're going to be at a war that they didn't want to be in the first place. Superhumans getting involved, people that they call friends who now will not, will be at odds. They don't want that to happen. So yeah, for sure. Now, at the end of issue 6, Waz attempts to reach out to Raja, I think is that girl's name, who's a fellow student that was close before the transformation occurred. However, that just, it was just fleeting moments. She doesn't recognize. It's not like he showed up and said, hey, oh, this is going on. He just shows up for a quick second and then he's gone. So again, she's getting aware. She's becoming aware of Waz trying to reach out to her for some reason. Now we get into issue 7, Maximus, the dire, you know, this horrible brother of Black Bolt escapes. He takes Medusa hostage, and he broadcasts to all of Attilan. Black Bolt is too weak to move upon the humans, and Attilan rests on the precipice of destruction. So now Maximus is telling everybody, hey, just to let you guys know, you're all going to die. And I have your precious Medusa hostage here. So not only is the shield that protects all the inhumans, that the one that's downed, it not only does it protect it from the soldiers outside, but it also protects them from the poison polluted air that is part of Earth. Now they've got trouble. And then we also find out that due to some instability in the land that Attilan's on, it's a very good possibility that the whole city could sink to the bottom of the ocean if there's too much commotion going on. In other words, if there's a lot of exploding missiles and tank shells, this city may drop to the bottom of the sea. So you got the air, you got the sea. You know, the kingdom of Attilan's not looking, it's not looking good for him right now. And so that's issue 7. Now issue 8, Mendicu, that's the guy's name, our inhuman representative over talking to the UN. He hits a political wall and then this is where I, you know, this would be my concern as well, but he hits a political wall as the government of the UN say, hey, what about all this alpha primitive business? You know, this is you guys are violating some human rights by putting these guys to work like you do. So now, you know, all this hope of Mendicu trying to get these guys and stuff. Mendicus. Oh, Mendicus. Who left the S off in these notes? Son of a gun. Mendicus. So, you know, Mendicus.
Sorry.
You're done. You're never taking notes from me again, Ronnie Adams.
Okay.
Are you eating chips again?
No.
No chips. Ah, good old Mendicus. Anyway, Mendicus hits political wall. They start badgering him about the alpha primitives. He's not making any headway with the UN. Carmax confirms Maximus's threat. So Carmax says, yes, Maximus is right. This place could go down if we're not careful. And at the end of this, I found it at the end of issue 8. It was really sad because Black Bolt could not, you know, he can't say anything. He couldn't find, you know, he can't really tell people how he's feeling. And the one thing that he finds comfort in at the end of the issue is Lockjaw, where Lockjaw is kind of standing beside him and he just kneels down and he hugs Lockjaw. It's just him and Lockjaw. And I thought it was interesting that the two characters that cannot speak are the ones that we are left with at the end of issue 8. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that's 5, 6, 7, and 8. There's a war going on outside. Things aren't looking good for Attilan. Black Bolt can't say a word. Maximus is done, got free. He's got Medusa.
They killed an inhuman.
Yeah, that's right. There was some crazy stuff that happened. An inhuman got killed because as the soldiers advanced onto the city, it's getting bad. Ronnie Adams, I mean, what do you got to say here, dude?
You kind of get a look into what's going on with Black Bolt because he's trying to keep diplomacy alive. He's trying to be diplomatic about it. He's got a plan. You can obviously see that. Just like you said, he doesn't want to bring the wrath of the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and the X-Men and everybody else in the world down on them. So he's trying to be the good guy and say, listen, we're not going to fight you. So let's find a different way to resolve this. But he obviously can't say anything because he would still destroy everyone if he tried. Mm-hmm. So heavy is the head that does wear the crown because even one of his most trusted advisors, his cousin, why can't I remember his name? Goatman.
Gorgon.
He kicks the door in and he's screaming murderers, calling the humans murderers. And he's like, why aren't you doing anything? But you automatically see what kind of power the Black Bolt does still hold because all he does is he just shoots him a look.
Yeah, it's just one look.
He's like, oh, ooh, my bad. Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, forgive my impetuousness. I haven't forgotten who you are, but, you know, this is my concern. You do definitely see that it does weigh on him. And then, you know, at the end of book eight, I mean, you see that the only person that does understand him, you know, that can give him any comfort is Lockjaw, mm-hmm. his dog. And sometimes a man just needs his dog, you know, so he had to hold on to comfort him. And you see, I really liked how they also played up the playfulness, because he doesn't quite know what's going on of Lockjaw, you know, the thing toy, having anything to eat. And so he's like, I mean, he's just in to play and eat. So, but he understands danger. It's really hard when you're in that. You kind of look at it like family.
Uh-huh.
You want to, you know, your family's in the wrong, you know, or there's two sides going at each other. You want to end, you want to end it with as little bloodshed as possible. And that can happen in families too. So you're like, listen, just everybody, just like you said, relax. Everybody chill out. Let's talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But for somebody who can't talk, that's hard, you know, and it's hard for him to have, you know, his most trusted people around him questioning, why are you letting this happen? Well, he's not really doing anything. It's Maximus. That's one of the, you know, he's plotted to take the crown. He's plotted to take the throne of Attilan, and you know, he wants his wife. He wants Medusa, and he ends up capturing her. It's all kind of feels like it's crumbling down around him, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's
much
it's,
like the city.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's all coming down around his ears, and he can't express what's happening. So it just ends on kind of a sad note there.
Mark Radulich, you put yourself in the shoes of Gorgon, okay? The guy who's got he's the leader of the army, serves under the king, sees all this stuff going on down around him, all this treachery, these humans, their insolence, and you can just take care of them in probably less than 2 minutes.
Very much a shoot first, ask questions later kind of guy.
What do you identify with what Gorgon's going through here? Would you act the same way, or would you take matters into your own hands, or what's the deal?
No, I would be a lot like Gorgon. You don't want to go against the king and lose your head, but he doesn't know what the other plan is. It just seems like Black Bolt's sitting on a couple of different decisions and not communicating with his family about what it is he wants to do.
So, okay. So you understand where he's coming from here. That was the point that this book was trying to get across, is like, okay, you guys need to understand that this is the king and there's a reason why he is king.
Right.
But I'm sitting here going, dude, just take, these guys are beneath you. Go out there and just say a word or send so-and-so and levitate them off the earth like 20 miles into the sky.
Even a whisper from Black Bolt would just level their army.
Yeah.
And at that point, they're not a part of Earth. They're a mm-hmm. part of the moon. They're their own sovereign state, you know? So they can be considered an act of war against the world.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, something's going to strike back. So, you know, that's why he's not doing it.
Okay. All right. Well, unless there's anything else, we'll finish this up with the last four issues, turn over to Mark, and then we'll get on out of here. All right. So issue nine, we get this is kind of like the one-off story. It's neat how they kind of focused on almost each member of the royal family in some aspects. Like we had the kind of the issue that had a good bit of Lockjaw in it. This one's focused around Triton. If you guys remember right, I called him the creature from the Black Lagoon. Mm-hmm. He can breathe underwater. Anyway, Triton starts out this issue. He's seeking assistance from Namor. He says, look, we need some help. And Namor's like, how about you go screw? You're on my land, and I'd like Atlantis back. That would be kind of nice. Remember how I said, Attilan's sitting there on top of Atlantis. It's told at the beginning that Submariner doesn't want to make a move against these guys because he'd rather not get involved, and he doesn't want to have a war on his hands. So he's just like, okay, well, and he heads back down and sits upon his throne. Well, so Triton coming to him and asking for help, he's like, I don't think so. Not happening. And we get a look at the story and kind of like, I wouldn't say an origin story, but it's an early story of Triton who when he was younger and his first witness to the evil of humanity against one another, specifically the Lusitania incident, where I think a submarine sank. Was it a cruise ship or just a ship? I want to say it was a cruise ship, wasn't it? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
The Lusitania.
It was just a ship.
Is it just a ship? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, either way, there was an act of war, act of aggression, where it got sunk by some torpedoes by, I think it was a German submarine. Again, my history's off there. Regardless, Triton witnessed it. He saved somebody, and that's kind of our story in issue 8. Issue 9. Now, issue 10, the battle rages. Maximus, he's still insane. Black Bolt, his whole court is in disarray. Gorgon has had enough, and he wants to attack. We find out that Maximus is, during this time, he influenced and stole Waz, our Inhuman that got transformed into the Alpha Primitive. The guy... This guy who got transformed into an Alpha Primitive, well, that wasn't exactly natural. Somehow Maximus had influenced this to occur. There's something going on with Waz's body to where he's dying. And I don't know if it's because he has to transport himself every once in a while. I have no idea, but I know he's laying there. Maximus is kind of gloating over him. Waz looks at him and there's no mirrors around. He can't, you know, and Maximus says, "Hey, you know, you can't go anywhere. You're not going to do anything. You're going to lay here and you're going to die. That's the way this is going to end." But Waz finds one reflective surface that he can jump into, and that is the reflection off of Maximus's eyes, which is pretty cool in my opinion. So he uses that reflective surface of Maximus's eyes, hops into Maximus's head, and then disappears. Maximus, while in his bouts of insanity after and you know, he's obviously a bout of rage since now he doesn't have now Waz has escaped. He grabs the scissors and starts cutting Medusa's hair, gives her a nice little buzz cut. So Medusa's beautiful long locks, prehensile locks of hair are now gone. And that's where we end issue 10. We get into issue 11. Black Bolt, we find out Black Bolt's had a plan all along. This is funny because this is called Plan A, if I remember correctly. That's the title of the issue, Plan A. And he's had this plan all along, and the only person that was aware of it was Karnak. Karnak reveals to everybody that Black Bolt has allowed his wife Medusa to be taken captured. Allowed his wife Medusa to be captured. As she could then infiltrate the inner sanctum of Attilan, where Maximus was at. She was able to, I think she was able to use her hair after it was cut off, which I didn't know you could do. But yeah, she was able to use that to cut the power off to the shield, making Maximus think that his whole grand plan was going just well. And she also cut off the power to the inner sanctum, which I don't know if there's a shield or whatever, but either way, Black Bolt is now know when the power goes out, it's on. And he proceeds to head straight for Maximus and confront him. Now, when Black Bolt reaches Maximus, Maximus like tries to use his psychic powers or whatever to get into Black Bolt's head. And he looks, Black Bolt not even moving. I mean, he's not flinching. He goes up, and then the only thing that comes out of Maximus's mouth is like something like, "Have mercy." Or no, he says, "Am I to be punished?" Something along those lines. So he knows it's over with. And his intent all along, Black Bolt's intent all along, is not to save Attilan here. It's actually to destroy it. And that's where we end issue 11. So, yes, Black Bolt had a plan. And his plan all along was to destroy Attilan. Issue 12, the final issue of this series. The destruction of Attilan. So, yes, let's talk about the destruction a little bit here. Because I'll synopsis the issue. It's real quick. Attilan gets destroyed. Or at least we think it gets destroyed. It's actually teleported to Tibet. But in everybody's eyes... in the government's eyes and humanity's eyes, it appears that it gets destroyed. Now this whole grand plan is put to use. Like Gorgon has to create an earthquake and blah 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 to make everything explode, and Atlantis sinks, and they hook Lockjaw to a USB port, and they turn him on, and he teleports the whole city. Crazy stuff. But in the end, Attilan's actually just fine. It's in the Himalayan mountains or some kind of crazy mountain surrounded by monks, away from humanity at this point in time. The Inhumans are believed to be dead, at least I assume. Atlantis returns to the bottom of the sea, where Namor is completely happy. And Namor was also, by the way, aware of Plan A that Black Bolt had. And so, Mark, let's before we get to your talking point, which this may be your talking point, you said you had no idea what happened at the end of this.
Yeah, I mean, maybe because I didn't read it very closely, but like I think I was looking for them to get transported to the moon, which is where I'm used to the Inhumans living, And then there's nothing like that. And I miss the whole part about them transporting. I mean, I knew when they were hooking up Lockjaw, because I know what Locke's powers are, that he's a teleporter.
Yeah.
I was like, I knew they were going to teleport the city somewhere, but it wasn't clear to me where the city was being teleported to, or even if it was being teleported. So I was a little confused, and you have now unconfused me.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
But I would have bet money that this was going to lead to them being transported to the moon. And when that didn't happen, I was a little disappointed.
Okay. All right. Well, go ahead. I mean, was there anything else in those last four issues that wrapped it up? Anything you like, dislike, want to talk about?
Other than Maximus, the way he's written is really hilarious. He's a fun character. But it was all like the DEA knew the CIA was setting up the FBI.
Of course.
You know, like how... And Black Bolt allowed all of this to happen because it allowed him to then fake the death of all Inhumans and move the city, you know, out of human visage.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, that's great and all, but it just felt like a lot of repetition throughout the 12 issues. Like, this could have been 6 issues.
In my eyes, true. Yeah, a very valid criticism. This is 12 issues that should have been told. I honestly think it could have been told in 4 to 6. Because,
well, I mean, I think they needed time to establish the family and the class system. They needed time to establish the that Maximus was in league with the humans, and the humans didn't really know what Maximus was doing. There's a lot of later issues where all it is the humans marching on the city and them going, Black Bolt, you gonna do anything? Black Bolt, you gonna do anything?
Nope.
Black Bolt, you gonna do anything?
Nope.
Well, fuck you, Black Bolt. I'm gonna challenge you. All right, I'm not really gonna challenge you.
Sorry.
But are you gonna do anything? No.
That's the truth. Flashback.
Here's a flashback to the Creature of the Black Lagoon dealing with the Lusitania. You know, and it was like, all right. So yeah, it sort of loses me in the middle, because I was really interested in the storyline with the kids and how this was affecting them. And in the beginning, I was like, okay, so what's Black Bolt's plan? Probably to transport him to the moon. That's why, you know, and I totally understood why Black Bolt didn't want to engage the humans in an all-out battle, because Iron Man would have showed up and Captain America would have showed up and all the Avengers would have showed up, and it would have been like, all right, this is not what we wanted.
Okay, let me ask you.
We don't want to fight with the metahumans of Earth.
I want to ask you a question, though. There is a point where they kill an Inhuman. What line does it take for the humans to cross before action by the Inhumans is warranted? Because he doesn't take action when one of them dies.
Number one, that boy should have just shut the fuck up.
Okay. You have all this power. Are you just going to let these guys overrun your city? I mean, there's
no, and ultimately they didn't let them.
Okay.
You know, he used it as basically cover so that they could go live in peace, which is all they ever wanted in the first place. So I think as long, you know, it was a risk putting the telekinetics out there and kids and everything else, because they could have all been shot to pieces. But that was the gamble. It was like, okay, for the betterment of this society, we're going to risk a few of these pawns. But ultimately, I think they made the right choice. Black Bolt's a hard... I mean, they even said this with the Inhumans ABC series. Black Bolt's a very hard character to write for because he can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so Medusa does a lot of his speaking for him. They just really beat that one note to death.
Yeah.
That they tried to play it like Rome burns while Nero fiddles, but he's not fiddling, and he understands the consequences of his actions. He's just waiting for the right pieces to fall into place so that he can move the Inhuman society. You know, so they have to sort of go along with it. And I guess he couldn't tell too many people, because then, you know, Maximus would have changed his plans. And, you know, it would have gotten out of hand very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, just like you said, there's the repeats of, we got to take action, we got to take action. They also, man, do they drive it home that this guy, oh, my goodness, he has got so much on his plate. He has, and he can't talk. He can't talk about it. They really wear you down with that heavy as the head that wears the crown thing, which, okay, fine. I mean, I understand it. But that could have been done in one or two issues at the most.
Yeah.
I just feel like this is something that could have been way shorter. Now, granted, I didn't look into the history of the series, whether they were planning on doing, you know, I don't think this was a mini series. Or there's a possibility that maybe this was an ongoing at first, and they were like, okay, we're going to wrap it up in 12. Ronnie, how about you? Final thoughts on Inhumans here.
I mean, I liked it. I'm total agreeance with Mark. It could have been about 6 issues long. A lot of politicking. A lot less action than I thought there was going to be. About 100% less action than I thought there were going to be. But by far, the most enjoyable characters were Maximus, Lockjaw, and actually for me, Black Bolt.
Yeah.
So, because you get to, you know, while they do hammer home the, you know, it's hard to be him. It's, you know, a woe is him. It still kind of, it made me think of the character and how much depth he's got. He's like, he can't talk. He is a king. Later on, you know, he kind of ousted from his throne. So it was really interesting. It was interesting to see that, but I'm not one for real life politics, so I kind of want to keep it out of the comic book. So
I hear you. Mark, is this something you're glad you read?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't love it. Like I said, there was way too much repetition in it for me. It was a little too wordy, and I don't feel like enough happened over 12 is to warrant 12 issues limited series. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't unhappy. I mean, it's not the worst thing we've read this year. Take a drink, everybody.
By far.
It wasn't Iron Fist, the Living Weapon. It wasn't, you know, Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes. It wasn't Wacky Raceland. It was pretty straightforward, even though, like, it lost me at the end. But I think it lost me at the end because I was just, like, skimming pages. Like, oh, God, I just want to get to the end of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I'm not unhappy that we read it. I thought, you know, having not read much in humans, it was interesting to see how the family got along.
Yeah. Would you feel that this was a good introduction to our characters of the Inhumans?
Yeah.
Okay.
The only thing is you don't get to see the royal family completely use their powers. So it was like they were saving that for an ongoing series.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, it wasn't, they didn't need it for the story they were telling.
True.
So I think it was more about how the society worked was really the heart of the story.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You know, I didn't find it that interesting. But, I mean, other people, I've read a lot of reviews of this series, and people love that about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know.
Yeah. I'm glad I had the opportunity to read it because I didn't know much about the Inhumans. And this did a good job, in my opinion, of telling me who they are, the struggles that they go through, the fact that they're all powerful and they're trying to find a home. Mm-hmm. We're not very welcoming, apparently, as humans here. But yeah, a good introduction, in my opinion, to learn who the Inhumans are. So I'm definitely glad I read it. Mark, why don't you go ahead? Let's plug our stuff here, man. Let you get to bed, dude. What do we got coming up?
All right. So the week that this is supposed to go on the network, as I said, we're doing Damn You Hollywood Inhumans. It's the first two episodes of the ABC series, and then the rest of the week is dedicated to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We're going to be, Jesse and I are going to review the new Quiet Riot, which I have to ask you, Jesse, have you heard either of the two big Quiet Riot songs, Bang Your Head, Mental Health, and Come On, Feel the Noise?
Oh, yeah.
You're familiar with both of those songs?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
You've heard those songs, Ronnie Adams. If you listen to a classic rock
station. You're too busy listening to Goat Whore. It's fine.
Your mother listens to Goat Whore.
Adult decapitation. But, all right, so that's good because I was like, if I have to play Come On, Feel the Noise, I'm gonna
No. That's classic rock around here, so
yeah,
I've heard it plenty.
So we're gonna review the new Quiet Riot. That ought to be fun. That's our jackal. You know, that's our totally 80s review of the year. last year was Jackal. This year's Quiet Riot. And then Pat's gonna come on, and we're gonna do Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll season two.
Yeah,
this week. Jesse and I on the Metal Hammer of Doom, we're going to review the new Haunted album. I think Robert will actually be on that show.
Yes, he will.
And then the day before that, if I can get these watched in time, I'm on episode 4, so I got to finish binge watching it tomorrow, which means I'm going to neglect my son, but that's okay.
you do what you got to do.
You know, watch Game of Thrones, interact with my son. we interact plenty today. He can go a day without me. But I got to finish watching Game of Thrones season 1, and we're going to talk about it. If you're, again, depending on when you're listening to this, it's either going to be tomorrow or last week. So That's it for now. I'm actually going to hang up. Thanks, guys. Like I said, overall, it was an okay story. It was too long in the tooth. Yeah, it was just too long with not enough meat in the sausage for me. There needed to be more going on, and the ending needed to be made a little bit more clear. But definitely not the worst thing I've ever read, and the art was fine. Good. Thank you, Jesse, for having me on. Thank you. You know, Ronnie, you should be happy that I was as tired as I was, because I didn't really pick on you this episode.
We talked about that last night too, didn't we?
But I'm tired. I don't pick on Ronnie.
Yes, it was. We discussed about how you pick on him, but you don't pick on me. Thank goodness.
Oh, I have other opportunities to pick on you.
Yes,
so.
That's true.
Hey, Mark.
Sir. Who's eating chips?
All right, man. Get some rest.
I'm gonna go.
Later.
All right, brother.
Bye.
All right, Ronnie Adams.
Yes.
You plug away.
I have a show called Screaming Boy Podcast, where we talk about nerd culture, pop culture. We have been on a involuntary hiatus because of computer problems, but we will be back soon. But Mark Ratlish has so kindly granted us use of his network on Friday night, so we've been doing some live shows here on the Ratlish and Broadcasting Network. We were supposed to do one this past Friday night, but my, I have a couple of co-hosts, Adam Runyon and Jesse Starcher, and both Jesse Starcher and I forgot to start the show on Friday night. So we were both like, I was sitting there like, to probably start that. I'm good.
We're good.
And we're good. So it is, we'll be back. We've got some cool stuff that we got in the works. So we will see you soon. Screaming Boy PR on Twitter, just look up Screaming Boy Podcast on Facebook, and then Screaming Boy Podcast on Instagram, the Insta.
Well, this is going up, we said, on the 4th of September. So,
that is Labor Day. I think I have Labor Day off this year.
My goodness.
I know, right?
Goodness me. So, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow me at Stiznarky on Twitter. You can find the show's Twitter at SourceMatCast. Go give that Ratlish and Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. If you go back in the archives to the 28th of September, that's not backwards. Let's try the 28th of August, which is today. It actually is going to be airing on. Okay. If you go back in the archives to the 28th of August, you'll find me and Ronnie Adams discussing one of Dean Compton's favorite standalone issues, and that's a Spider-Man issue number 17. Not Amazing Spider-Man. We're talking Adjectiveless Spider-Man number 17, where Peter Parker... And well, let's just say, if you look at the cover, Peter Parker and Thanos are they're a big portion of that cover, and you want to know why. So you want to tune in, give that a listen. Short episode. I think it's going to be around 35 to 40 minutes after I get it edited. Check it out. You want to know what happens in that issue, why it's Dean Compton's favorite. Really don't know why it's his favorite, but we postulate why it's a good story. That's for dang sure. So you want to check that out. Other than that, we're on episode 130. This will be 132, I think. No, 131. It was something like that. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we have at least 125 yes. episodes. That is Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Podcast. Thanks again
for joining me.
That's you. My name is Jesse Starcher. I want to bid everybody a duh.
Yeah.
And we are getting out of here. Everybody, ha.